Here at Early Excellence, we specialise in early childhood education. We offer expert advice and guidance through training, consultancy and classroom design. With the Early Excellence podcast, we aim to inspire and support you as well as challenge your thinking. So if that's what you're looking for, you've come to the right place. Hello, everybody. Andy Burt here with episode 179 of the Early Excellence podcast. In this week's episode, we're joined by Helen Quincy, who tells us all about her passion for outdoor learning and the wonder of creating inspirational environments for young children outdoors. So here you go. Here's my Early Excellence podcast chat with Helen Quincy. Okay, so here we are. Helen, lovely to see you. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today. How are you doing? You okay?
I'm really good, thank you, Andy. That's really great. I'm really delighted to be here talking with you today.
Well, it's great. I've been really looking forward to talking to you because we are going to be talking about something that for me is something that I'm really passionate about, and I know that you're really passionate about. We're going to be talking about outdoor learning, of course, and the development of outdoor spaces for learning. And so there's a lot there that we're going to get into. We're going to get into starting from scratch. So that starting point of developing an outdoor space, where you might start, what key things to think about in terms of the environment. We're going to go from that into the materials and the resources and what sorts of things work really well for young children. And so for people who are listening to the podcast, if you are thinking about developing your outdoor space, there's going to be a lot here that I think will really help you to develop your own space. And then we're going to get on to the impact on the children, that when you do develop your outdoor space, what is it that you see within your children that, you know, you can see that real impact in terms of quality of learning? Okay, so there's lots that we're going to talk about. Let's start off though with a bit of an introduction. I know you've got had a varied career. You've done all sorts of different things. Can you tell us all about it? Would that be okay?
Of course, that'd be delighted. Well, I've taught for over 30 years, and within that time, extensively over EYFS, Key Stage 1, and some into Key Stage 2 as well. I've had a lot of management roles within that. I've been assistant head of two very, very large primary schools and taught EYFS within juggling those sort of management positions as well. I've also been a SENDCO in a couple of schools as well, and I've been an English coordinator as well within that time. It's five schools I've worked across, so I've worked in the mixture, as I said, the two large primary, one where I spent an extensive part of my career working in different phases and ages, but a lot of time in that early years and developing that with the teams over different times. And also I've worked in one infant school, two very small village schools as well. So I've seen the perspective from different sides, really, from working in large establishments with 500 plus pupils, as well as smaller schools as well, and all those different wonderful elements that make up a school too. But I've always been very passionate about our education. That's why I went into teaching in the first place. And I love a lot and all that teaching over time and making that difference was what it was all about for me. And then in my most recent few years, I had always done a lot of training when I was teaching full time, welcomed people to our setting and worked in lots of groups within the county to establish good early years practice and lots of moderation work. And then I took that forward. Now I do some early years independent training on different areas. I run some courses. And also I've been lucky enough, because I'm also art trained as well, that I work with different artists within the county where I live. And we do lots of multi-generational work as well there, building on all that good practice of early education that actually can be spread across all ages. So it's really brilliant to be able to sort of work with so many different wonderful people, engaging them on different art activities, as well as obviously all that good early years practice that I can disseminate and learn from when I'm out in the environment.
Yes. Wow. Yeah. As I say, really varied, really interesting. We're going to be talking, as I said before, we're going to be talking about outdoors. So I know it's something that you're passionate about. Tell us all about that. You know, is that something you've always been passionate about? Have you always been passionate about the outdoors? Is it something for you that you and maybe enjoyed as a child yourself? I don't know. When did that start?
Yes, I think you're right. I think that sort of engagement with outdoors, obviously myself, you know, being in the garden. Obviously, I still remember now as a child making the mud pies and obviously exploring myself outside. I've always been very fascinated with flowers and plants. And because from a young age, I always drew and I always loved to draw. They would be the things now, if anybody looked at any of the artwork I do now as well, they'd say it had a floral-esque to most things. But I've always been fascinated by patterns in nature and the difference that makes. And I know now, very luckily, a lot of people now really talk about the sort of well-being aspects of being outside. And I truly sort of believe in all that. I think ourselves, when we can get outside, sort of fresh air, being immersed in nature, it does have that feeling and making us feel better. But I think as well, from my perspective and from teaching, I just feel all the educational benefits as well of learning outdoors. It's another educator in itself. We always say our early years classroom is like the third educator if we've got ourselves as the teacher and our fabulous support assistant. And we've got that enabling environment. And outside, we've got that enabling environment that's actually there for us. And it doesn't really matter to me what that looks like, because it's the space itself that we can actually think creatively about and how we might use that. So I've just been always very passionate about being outside, about exploring out there. I always like a day out when we go out to places as well. And I always think that we always learn new things by going and exploring outside. Yeah. So that, as I say, that sort of passion for outdoors came from a very early age.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're right. I think there is that link to sort of well-being and also engagement. I think that you often see outdoors. You see it inside, but you also see outdoors as well. So I was thinking about, I would always say that I think the best learning happens when kind of time runs away with you. You know, that kind of, you know, like, well, the example I often give is, you know, when children are playing on a beach and they are exploring damming the stream on the beach and they are, you know, making these great big dams and they're working together and they're doing all of that kind of thing. And then there's a break in the dam and they have to problem solve and they're all doing it. Just suddenly 3 hours have gone and they've just completely engrossed and engaged in what they were doing and the time has completely run away with them and they think, crikey, it was just lunch and now it's the end of the day, you know, that kind of thing. And for me, the best learning happens when we get that involved, that engrossed in something, that the time just goes. Whilst that does happen indoors or can happen indoors, I think there is something about being outdoors that means that happens more often. And I think often when I talk to people about things like their forest schools practice, if they go to a forest school site, that's often one of the things that people say is that when we get there, you don't look at your watch. You're not looking at the time. In the classroom, you're always looking at you're always looking at the clock and you're thinking, well, is it nearly lunchtime or is it nearly this? Well, do I need to be moving to that next? Whereas you get to this separate outdoor space and then suddenly time becomes less of an issue when we relax. And it's at that point, I think we often get a higher quality of learning because we're not stopping and starting. We're not as stressed. We are just completely involved in what we're doing. And I think there is something about being outdoors that helps us to get to that point.
Most definitely. I totally agree there. I think that having observed children over my career and actually different ages of children as well, using those spaces outdoors, it's almost like a different perspective that you see perhaps sometimes that children feel more relaxed to perhaps engage and start a conversation or join in with a conversation. All that wonderful collaboration that takes place as well. And of course, we have that indoors. I think outdoors as well, by the very nature that we set things up and things that we provide that we'll talk about later, I think that we're giving lots of choices and actually we want to develop independent learners. Yep. And of course, that outdoor environment is very enabling to establish those key skills, isn't it, that children can build on. And intrinsically, everything's very linked towards the outdoors. And actually, we can learning is built on sort of sequentially, just by the steps they take from the processes of actually being outdoors and actually what they have to engage with. So I think that's the difference as well. And of course, there's that the outdoors offers the opportunity to, of course, move differently than indoors, developing, you know, those bigger gross motor skills, as well as obviously the fact there isn't the perhaps the noise constraints that we may have indoors. Of course, we want that working engagement noise through play, exploratory, discussing stories, et cetera, et cetera. But of course, when we're outdoors, it's sort of like that release that, oh, I could actually, if I wanted to experiment with sound, I could do that outdoors, whether that's my voice or whether I've got some instruments outside. And actually, I can actually speak louder. I can actually obviously like be engaged. I haven't got those constraints outside as well. So I think it builds this sort of picture of a sort of more rounded child as well, that actually all those different aspects of my character can come out. And actually, you see very different sides of children, I think, when they're indoors and outdoors.
Yes.
And for me, when they're engrossed in wonderful exploratory play outdoors, we can take a step back and actually watch. And it's that key information that we gain by actually observing children in the play outdoors that actually we can take on board. And actually, we find out ever such a lot about their thinking processes for learning, how they've actually achieved something, how they've negotiated to move an object from one place to the other. Perhaps they've noticed something outside, like a spider's web or a mini beast, and they're talking and engaging about that. And of course, as we know as practitioners, all that wealth of knowledge then is my learning that I can take back into the classroom. I can show it on the, if some pictures on the whiteboard, it can engage me in writing. It gives me a purpose for writing, a purpose for talking, purpose for maths, doesn't it, as well, for that mathematical understanding.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And when we chatted as well, a couple of weeks ago now, we talked about, you know, the content for the podcast, what sorts of things we were going to talk about. And what came up in the conversation was that you'd been in this very privileged position to be able to develop an outdoor space pretty much from scratch. As soon as you said that, my ears pricked up and I thought, wow, what a great thing. First of all, what a brilliant thing to be able to do. You know, that's a kind of almost like a once in a career opportunity to take a space outdoors and plan it, create it, think about actually the experiences you want the children to have, think about, well, actually what's the quality like, all of those sorts of things, and to really put it into place, you know, to plan it out and then see it through as a project. I thought, wow, what an exciting thing to be able to do, but also then to be able to talk about. So I wanted to get onto that. First, can you tell us about your experience of developing the space? Let's start with where it was, first of all. You know, which space have you developed?
Yes, well, what happened is this was a project from quite a while ago, the first project that we developed in the year 2000. So in that time, the school was a two-form entry school and it had a very large, really lucky, large fields, large playground access that ran off from the exit doors from the reception area. And so we had a small space internally sort of developed inside that obviously could be a joint space of learning. And then I really wanted to have this sort of outdoor learning space as well because of all the benefits and also because, you know, the space allowed it to be there. And for me, it was the blank canvas that you talked about. It was, and I'm very much a person who loves working with teams, but I'm very, very happy to obviously sort of collate notes and obviously put together proposals and obviously add things in. But I just think when we're starting a project, the best way is obviously to sort of share the vision. So for me, what I did, I was very fortunate. Yes, I was working in a management role, but actually I was sharing my passion for the outside. And I was obviously speaking to the head at the time and my governing body and sort of saying that actually if we could achieve this outdoor learning space, what my intent would be, but also what the benefits would be, that impact would be. So in the first instance, me being me, I would draw something. So I drew a vision of what an ideal outside space may look like so that people could understand where I was coming from. That enthusiasm, hopefully, and working in teams, I was able to get some of the Parent Teachers Association, my governing body, and also my head teacher and other teachers within the school that I spoke about the project to, on board as a like a working party. And I think when you've got that working party, you've got that great body of knowledge, haven't you? Yes. I was fortunate because people on the team then had experience, obviously, of drawing architectural designs. Yes. And obviously other people have links to other businesses as well in terms of that they can point you in the direction or have you considered. And so I was coming with my team from the educational perspective of things. And obviously having that enthusiastic team around me meant that obviously we could put together a proposal. So as I say, we did that visually. Then we looked at potential costings behind that and looking at what the space we could achieve within that. And then we literally put that sort of bid, if we like, out to local companies and other organisations, charity organisations that we looked into and found. And of course, you know, you write 1,000 letters and obviously you wait for a few responses. And that's fine because everybody's busy and there's only a certain amount of money available wherever, isn't there? And the school as well looked and saw on the development plan how this would benefit. And so as well, some money was allocated, of course, accordingly there as well. And so under those practices of best practice, we looked at obviously different costings. We had to adjust our plans on the time as well. But because of our vision, and we were fortunate to get some funding, we put all that pot together and all those ideas. And we actually shared our ideas with the wider community. So we shared it with our school community so that everybody felt a part of it. Because, of course, whenever you have anything built anywhere, there's always going to be the health and safety aspects of having anything built around a site. And so everybody was on board because, obviously, I think as well, because we put out little leaflets and, of course, in our newsletters and visual representation, what it may look like, or these are some of the things we wanted to achieve. And we could always tweak it because, of course, it was about having an exploratory area, having an area where obviously people could create, having a space to move, and obviously having, you know, options for water play and those other elements that we wanted to have as well. Yes. So with that first bid, we sort of put that out there. We were fortunate to get that funding. And that was a huge learning curve for me because, of course, I'd not worked with building, you know, institutes, and that was wonderful. But, and of course, as you can appreciate, it's a lot of work to obviously meet with them on a daily basis, check the site every morning. But we all knew the long-term benefits, so it was all fine to do that. And actually, the building work in itself became a huge project. The children were just fascinated by watching the development. And it wasn't just the children in the EYFS that were fascinated. The whole school community is fascinated to see the differences, aren't they? A bit like when you have a house built and you see those foundations and then you see the next level and the next level and the changes over time. And of course, we documented that pictorially and through photographs and annotations. So we could have that actually and use that actually of changes over time and put that into our work. Yes, so it's part of this that we built our own resource, really, through building another from the project.
That's the thing. I think what's immediate to the children is always interesting to them. You know, that exactly. I think sometimes we overthink things. We try and bring things, other things to children when actually they're interested in what's there in front of them. You know,
that's right.
So, you know, if there is a building project on site or if there is something, if there is a road that goes past the school that we can watch from our classroom or whatever it might be, actually they find that interesting. Exactly. Yeah, definitely. Okay. And so you put together the plans. I'm interested to know what was on those plans at that initial stage. You know, with that dream vision, what were you aiming for? What sorts of things were on that plan?
Yeah, so in that first plan, that sort of dream vision for me was actually having areas, and I would pictorially represent that with, say, some tyres, and the tyres were perhaps used as planters. And then we obviously had different elements that obviously could import like a water play. And we wanted to keep it very natural as well. And when we extended this further, we actually came into contact and we were looking at sort of natural materials that could be included as well. And as the project grew and grew, so from that first initial drawing of having a water play area that actually could be movable, so it wasn't fixed, so it could actually offer itself open, more open-ended play as well. that we actually, the person working for us there had some great ideas about actually using some reclaimed natural wood to actually create what we call the wigwam seating. So we wanted to encourage seating outside because we wanted to encourage, obviously, a love of nature, being immersed in nature outside as well, planting areas, all those things were on the plan. But when, by talking again through those sorts of plans, this wigwam seating idea came about. And actually, with that cross, sort of the way those wooden planks were obviously arranged, made a lovely sort of seating area on two sides, but he actually made the most fantastic dens underneath. So we obviously had, you know, different opportunities just from that idea that somebody came up with from looking at the plans as well. On there as well, I'd seen when you were resourcing catalogues, and obviously you look, don't you, at different areas that people have. And we obviously then saw, oh, we could perhaps have a little wooden bridge. And so it became the sort of Monet-esque bridge that obviously we had over a little pebbled area. And then over time, I wanted to engage sort of nature within everything that we did. And so, again, we were able to have these vertical sleepers cemented in and planted around. And within those, the children drew different aspects. We were fortunate that our school was by a wood. And so the children drew different aspects of the woodland creatures, leaves, nature. And we actually had those sort of engraved, and we actually had those sort of so they could be like for rubbings later as well. And it made sort of like a windy pathway through. And because we wanted to make sure it was all inclusive to everybody, we had sort of, I wanted to have different textures on the floor. And so we compromised in terms of cost, but we were able to have sort of some soft flooring that led on to a little pebbled area that led on to a different textured floor. And then woven in between was lots of sort of natural planting as well, and herbs, as you would expect there too. So lots of nice floral aspects too that we could have. And because we were very fortunate with the amount of trees, and there was one big tree at the front area of the second garden that we were looking at, we always wanted to have, we thought, wow, wouldn't it be great to build around this tree and have this sort of like a tree house. And I mean, very low level tree house. We had three steps up, and the tree was surrounded by this wooden structure, like a tree hut. And actually within it, we had little slits cut, and it was a wide area that the children could easily access because it was safe to go up these three steps with obviously safety areas around it. And then the children would be immersed themselves by looking, because they were surrounded by the tree bark in the centre, but they could look out across 360 degree aspect of their view. And so, as you could imagine, the resources that we chose to put up there with the binoculars and obviously like the clipboards, we had some wooden boards as well. And quite naturally, they started just engage with their surroundings. What could they see? So quite naturally, yeah, conversations would happen. Oh, look at what's changing today. Or look what I can view through here. And one side actually looked over onto a distant car park within our school. So they were fascinated by the numbers on the plates or the number plates. And so we'd obviously get all this immersive sort of education going on as well. So we had these areas, we had our bridge, we had our water play, and we didn't create what we would perhaps call now, and a lot of people talk about the mud kitchen, but we did have mud play, but we had it more open-ended. So it was less like a little wooden bench. And obviously, we had obviously the equipment that went in it. But actually, what we found was by having it that way, we could move it if we needed to. The children could negotiate and change that over time. And we just used lots of different guttering to create our sort of movable water experience, as it were. Again, to keep it more open-ended as well and more natural. But I say that wonderful. So taking something from a drawing element by working with people, gaining their experiences, talking with the community and talking with the people who, again, with all good practice, we get three quotes in. What could you offer? People give their perspectives as well, don't they, from their side of things. And obviously that gives lots more information for the school to assimilate and think, oh, actually, through costing, we could see that would be wonderful. Like I said about the wigwam seating, I hadn't seen those before, but obviously I was just so engrossed by the fact, oh, I could see all these possibilities. We had three placed, and actually you could actually seat 30 children on the sides and underneath. So you could have whole class stories, as well as, of course, the area itself did eventually, as we extended into three-form entry, we would have 90 reception children utilizing these spaces quite easily as well, because we had a slabbed area too that it moved on to. So that was really nice as well.
Yeah. What I like is that at each point when you've been describing the space, you know, what the space was planned as, but then also, of course, what it then became, that you've talked quite a lot about how you didn't want it to be fixed. You know, the water play, for example, it would be the easiest thing in the world in a way to go and get sort of tubing and guttering and then fix it all to a fence or fix it onto a wall and kind of make something that it is potentially will look sort of certainly to an adult very neat and very tidy and potentially exciting. But by fixing it, you lose a lot of the possibilities.
Absolutely.
That when it's fixed, it's actually to children not as exciting because they can't pick it up. They can't look through it if it's a piece of tubing. They can't, you know, they can't move it around and explore with it and problem solve and decide what it's going to be or shout through it or look through it. Or, you know, it becomes less interesting when it's fixed. And I really like the way that you've balanced the fixed things like the different heights, like the bridge and the treehouse. So some fixed things that are well placed with other things that are very open-ended and very much not fixed, so that actually they decide, what am I going to do with this today? How am I going to get this from here to here? How am I transporting it? Because, of course, when we fix things, you take away the job of moving it. You take away the physical nature of it and often the problem-solving that goes with that. So, yeah, no, I really like the way that you were talking about it in that way.
Lovely. And the great thing is that, again, there within my experience and had fabulous time with all those years of working and see the development there, that when I did move on and work with smaller schools and our spaces were very different, that actually those same principles could be employed in a different way, but actually they were still, even though I may have had in another establishment, just a very small sort of area that actually had a slight little bit of sort of safety flooring and some slabbed areas and a little gate around it, we were still able to think about that good quality practice early years education. And by carefully choosing one piece of outdoor storage so that children could access those and bring them out.
Yes.
And also other things like a wheeled trolley that could be easily manoeuvred. It made sure that all those resources were always readily available. And so that the children became instigators of what we're getting out today. Putting the resources out, of course, with adult help where needed, was actually part of the learning journey and setting up our provision.
Yes.
And actually making those choices. So
yes.
Even though as educators, we know what skills we're developing day on day and what we're building on from the learning we've seen the day before, we're still enabling children to be part of that process. Say, for instance, like filling up our water and cans of water and making them perhaps a quarter filled, two children can carry those to a certain area.
Mm.
And then obviously as an adult, I might fill mine full up and carry behind with another one. But obviously it's about that cooperation and we're all part and parcel of the learning journey, isn't it?
Yes.
So in my instance, I was very fortunate because it was a large area and two large areas that we developed over time. But actually, we could still employ those sort of principles to different environments as well.
Yes.
And it's just having to think about making those choices of what resource is right for the area, what we have, what resources we have in terms of financial resources, as well as making those choices, isn't it, about educationally, why that's right to be there.
Yeah, definitely. No. I like what you were saying about the kind of the setting up. I think it's always more effective for children and adults to be getting things out together and for it to be almost like a community of learners where we're talking as we're getting things out. We're talking about what do you think you might do today? You know, what sorts of things are you going to carry on with? And as we are doing that with the children, we're getting things out. We are showing them how we lift and carry. We're showing them how we value the resources. We're taking care with the materials. We are showing care in terms of really valuing the materials so that they don't just get kind of thrown into a shed at the end of the day, but everything has its place, you know, that kind of thing. Whereas I tend to find certainly outdoors compared to inside, we often don't have the same level of expectations. You know, everything is stored really effectively, usually inside and photographed and labeled, and everything has its place. Outdoors, not quite so much. Inside, there's often a real focus on independence. Outside, it's often about adults getting things out for the children.
Yes.
And so I think that idea of getting things out together and working on that together, it saves adult time, but it also adds more quality to the experience. Children actually like being involved in doing jobs, you know, whether that be getting resources out or whether that be even things like, let's have a tidy up, you know, let's have a sweep of the outdoor area, let's clean today, or let's, you know, let's get out the sponges and brushes or whatever it might be. You know, that kind of thing. Yes. I think children actually enjoy being doing things that are purposeful in that way.
Most definitely. Just thinking about the one fixed element that we did have that was so beneficial. We did, one of the doors led out and obviously had a wall on the side of it. And so we did have a metal, purchased a metal tree, weaving tree. Again, that linked very nicely with our wood and all those elements as well. But actually the benefits that we had of that, of course, of children working vertically and all those elements of that gross motor skills. But it wasn't just, you know, there were different times when, say, in earlier in the year when we were exploring colour and the children would match the colours on the weaving tree to some of the ribbons that we might have attached on there, as well as threading leaves through it and bendy twines through it as well. So it had its place as well, because obviously, but that was to make the wall more attractive as well as have a learning opportunity too. I just brought back, I thought that was the one fixed thing that I thought we had a lot of benefit from. Yeah. That the children sort of thought, you know, aesthetically it looked very pleasing if anybody was walking by, but also it felt it had so many learning opportunities for counting, for weaving, for those gross motor skills as well. And what we did find is that we had some large cable reels donated to us. And actually what we decided to do with that was we did a big art project where we created those into a mosaic table.
Wow.
And obviously the children became involved with the design and making of those. And I think that's really nice when somebody in your community has donated something.
Yeah.
And actually you could see we've put it to a purpose, but actually we've got that now as a wonderful resource that we have ownership over and everybody can use.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've talked about a range of things already, haven't we? We've talked about the landscaping. We've talked about the plans for the different spaces that were fixed, like the treehouse and the bridge and some of the different surfaces as well. You know, the kind of the pebbles and things that go underneath the bridge, all of those kinds of things. We've talked about some of the resourcing. So the water you've talked about mud play as well. I was interested to know about some other things. So what about things like large construction? And what did that look like within the space?
Yes, so in our large construction, we had large large blocks that we had on a trolley that, again, could be wheeled to and access really readily. Lots of hollow blocks as well, so that obviously we got those opportunities because children would quite naturally bring out some of the small world to engage with outdoors as well. So they became obviously like buildings one week or obviously castles another week, or they may... And some of them they could obviously use as stepping stones and making up their own arrangements to obviously move around. We had a big barrel with obviously the guttering that we've talked about, large planks again that obviously could be used to make bridges and stepping stones. And so we had those as well. We also, because of the natural field, we were able to resource some natural writing boards. So some treated wood that obviously was nice and smooth, so the children could have those as sort of natural areas as well. And also within the sort of the hollow blocks, obviously we had solid blocks as well that the children obviously could create with outside. And sometimes they would use those to obviously make like little tables and put their planks across. And obviously there we'd have some different finds that we may have got from a charity shop in terms of obviously, you know, our sort of stainless steel pots and bits and pieces for our water play and mud play. And we also had lots of plant pots as well. And the children would use those in lots of different creative ways. So again, they would obviously have they'd perhaps sometimes link their creative design and make something to put in the flower pot, as well as obviously having the real materials growing outside. So we were influenced by their environment with what they made. So in terms of sort of those sort of elements, they were able to use it very creatively.
Yes, fantastic. I was interested to know about the impact then, you know, so because this is very different, isn't it, from your starting point to the space that you've then designed, first of all, and then created with all of these wide-ranging experiences from open-ended water play to large construction to the different things to explore, so going over the bridges and then the kind of the tree house and all kinds of other kinds of rich experiences within a very natural space. What did you then see in terms of the children? Now, what did you then see in terms of what the children were doing? What was the impact of it really in terms of their play? What did you see?
Well, we'd always track children's involvement levels over time.
Great.
So using the Louvren scale, we actually saw a huge increase in terms of obviously the children that were engaged much earlier in the practice as well. We'd always tracked those levels and obviously seen that progress over time in the first part of the summer term, you know, over time where that had really come to fruition in everything that we were doing. But what we found was that that happened a lot earlier. So those higher levels of engagement that we were tracking were seen at a much earlier part of the sort of academic year within the reception phase. So we saw that really happening. We saw lots more conversation and actually lots more children that actually we were able to, we've always been a school then that we wanted to develop this rich vocabulary because we knew the benefits of that. But obviously, in terms of, you know, you may have lots of visual things within the classroom, but we were seeing that in practice outside. So what we were able to do is obviously we saw that children were engaging in these conversations. So as practitioners, and being very fortunate to work with wonderful staff members within my team, we talked a lot about how we would watch the play, how we would listen in, and then how we would take that forward and how we would scaffold that learning. So we did ever such a lot of listening, recording verbatim what children were saying, looking about how we could extend that later. And what we found over time as well, that those children that were developing and using a wider vocabulary, that became more evident at an earlier stage as well. Children that were perhaps in the indoor environment, perhaps a little bit more quieter, outside we saw them engaging and obviously talking more outside as well. And we immersed our sort of ICT outside, not only through pictorial representations and with the iPad taking photographic evidence, but also with sound buttons and obviously like little recordable boards outside. So we could put little key prompts in different areas at different times and the children could listen to those as just little aid memoirs of, oh, right, we might look at that today. We might, can you find this? It might sound it. Those types of things. So we saw that engagement with the ICT, obviously at a greater, we could see those skills being developed earlier as well. And children taking their own photographs and then we share those. So obviously had lots more opportunities to do those things as well. And one of the biggest projects that we did, and we did link this in with a sort of initiative, we'd always done very well in terms of our good level of development. We'd always had very strong phonic development. We'd always promoted language really well. We'd promoted early number and all the different areas of learning. And we had lots of success over many, many years developing and working in teams. And I can't stress how fabulous it is when you're working with wonderful people who just want the best for children. So we're looking for the next thing that might just help to give them that little edge of the next bit of vocabulary. And we take that sort of forward. But what we did decide was that actually, as always, we track our progress. We look at our outcomes. And even though we'd made really good progress in all those areas, writing, because of all the multifaceted skills of writing, we thought, right, we're going to take this and we're going to, even though we've done very well at getting those areas of writing developed, we're going to look at into these groups. And we looked at boys' writing and we looked, obviously, compared it against our girls' writing outcomes. And we could see the progresses from starting points because that's what it's all about. But we actually thought, right, if we can utilise some of the practices that we've now got going on outside, and we could actually have this focus of thinking about, well, that may lead to writing, as we talked about earlier, having the purpose for writing, but actually we're giving the skills of the writing through all the gross motor elements. And what we did find over time was that our outcomes for our boys' writing did improve quite tenfold because they were actually so much more engaged in the process. They wanted to, when we had some sunflowers growing over time, they were more engaged in the drawing of that. They were more engaged in the mathematical measuring of that. But they were actually then always naturally recording. As I said about in the treehouse with the lookout sort of station and the clipboards and the wooden boards, they would quite naturally draw what they were seeing, but they were applying their phonic knowledge through purpose. And we would have our scaffolding around thinking about sentence starts and thinking about connectives and thinking about those other elements of story work. And so what we naturally found over time, because we were doing that outside, we saw the children doing that outside. So whereas before, yeah, we'd always made outside and we'd always done writing outside, but actually we found that more of our writing came from indoors, outdoors, and we went with it. Yeah, yeah. And we went with, as we know, I would sit there and I would draw and I'd label my picture. You know, the children working around me, they're obviously seeing me as a writer and somebody who's engaging with the outdoors, so they're wanting to take part of that. And also then there'd be other times where we had a project and somebody would come up with an idea like the mini beast or the spider's web, and we'd co-create that together with the resources. Yeah. So we'd have lots of natural resources that we obviously have collected, like our cones and our stones and all those shells. And we'd perhaps create that visually together and then use that opportunity to, oh, I wonder who could actually think about how we're going to be able to tell our head teacher about what we're doing today. And they'd say, oh, I know, I could write this, I could draw this. Yeah. And then as that all developed further, I always had the books that you could just slot in and out little ideas and work with children. And of course, their drawings, some may be large, so we'd take a photo and pop it in there. But if they'd drawn something and, you know, they didn't mind it being folded or popped in the book, we'd put it in. So we were getting all this wealth of knowledge. And we'd actually, that to us, it was the process over the product. So it's actually the writing journey that they had. Of course, I was happy with what they'd actually produced on the board or on if paper, if that's what they'd chosen to do. But actually, it was the fact that obviously we could see the different stages of learning. And over my career, when I have worked with a lot of younger teachers, and they've perhaps said to me, how do you know the next step? Well, how do you know how to teach that next? And I said, well, if we all think back to obviously the stages of development, and of course, we're going through that process. And with writing being so many skills coming together, if we've created this enabling environment outside, inside, together, and we've got opportunities for talking about our phonic knowledge outside, we're actually speaking outside, we've got some scaffolding going on with the writing, we're promoting a collection of words that you've come up with today, quite naturally talking about an object, we've got all the vocabulary we need.
Yes.
We've obviously, you've got describing words that other children would come out with. As the adults, we'd reiterate those. And obviously we'd say, oh, yes. And have you thought about it obviously being bumpy and textured? And we could write that into our book as well. So it's this co-creation all the time of the language.
Yes.
And so, as I say, we just found that the boys' writing improved even more dramatically as well over that period of time through the development.
Yeah, but you're right. It is about those contexts. You first of all created, I think, interesting places to talk and interesting places to make marks. So things, you know, you could very easily picture children in the treehouse looking down and kind of drawing that space that they can see, you know, or planning it out from that kind of, from that bird's eye view, if you like. But also the kind of the natural experiences and you modeling alongside that, you know, modeling how to draw what you can see in front of you and then label it, all of those sorts of things, and giving real life opportunities for writing and mark making. That's when it happens, isn't it? You know, that is, those are all of the kind of key ingredients for a rich experience around writing within the early years. You know, it's the motivation, it's the experiences, it's the talk, it's the modelling, it's all of those sorts of things, whether that be inside or outside, really.
Most definitely. And also the other thing that outdoors I always feel is wonderful for, and that's why it doesn't matter what kind of space you have, was the story writing. So we could actually walk the story.
Yeah.
We could move the story. We obviously would have the resources, whether it be a fabric that might be representing obviously the river near the bridge. We're going around, so we've got all that developmental sort of positional language, haven't we? Where did we start? We're obviously using other well-known stories as a sort of basis, and obviously the children obviously making representations from that. And then after we can walk the story, we've got that story journey, then we took that into large paper in terms of drawing that and placing objects and all that positional language, or where did we go first? And then so we would draw the story map after we'd walked and talked the story. Yeah. And it was the co-creation element again, because, of course, who might we meet on our story journey was depicted by what may come into our garden space at that time. Or it may be an object that they thought was representing something else as well. And we use that. So that's amazing too. And I think we just had that language for story was another key impact, as well as the nurture side of things, because when our space wasn't used at a lunchtime, it became open to the rest of our school for a space that might be more appropriate for some people that wanted a quieter, immersive, nurture sort of a natural space. So that was available as well, because yes, it was built across near our rooms, but it is part of our school. And I just feel very passionate about early years being part of the whole school. Yes. And everybody using that, because as we know, all those foundations within our early years practice, all that scientific inquiry leads on into all that scientific inquiry in Key Stage 1-2, leads on into secondary school, GCSE, all those elements of that scientific inquiry, just for instance, in one area of the curriculum, goes all the way through. And we're called the foundation stage, aren't we? Because we're building those foundations, and it is about that foundation for learning and future learning, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's Helen, it's been so interesting to talk this through with you, you know, to see that space from the very beginning, and the kind of the plan of the space, the idea of what it could look like, and then take it through to the reality of what you can create, what you can actually do, what it then looks like, what you then put into it in terms of water resources, what you put into it in terms of mud play and construction and writing opportunities and all of those sorts of things, and then to see the impact on the children. It's incredibly powerful, incredibly powerful. We'd better start to kind of wrap things up. I'm aware of your time, really, as much as anything else. What I think comes across loud and clear in what you're saying is that you are somebody who kind of is always thinking and reflecting and excited by all kinds of things. And so I was going to ask you about kind of what's next for you, because I know that you're that sort of person who'd be always thinking about, right, for me, what's next? What am I going to do next? I understand that you're working on different projects that are coming up. So tell us, just to finish off, tell us about what's coming up for you.
Yes, thank you. No, that's wonderful. Thank you. Yes, well, I've recently had published a book, which is called What Can You See, What Can You Say? Because I was very passionate about early vocabulary. And that is a book aimed for educators and parents. And within that, I've put key questions and I've drawn pictures and written poems within there to promote early vocabulary. And the intention there was to sort of share the types of questions we may ask about the pictorial representation in the book, but actually then to use those to actually, when you are engaging in the outdoors or obviously looking at objects and talking as well. So that's one project that I've recently had that one come out, which has been very exciting. I'm also still do lots of training. So under my early years inside out, I've still been doing lots of training in terms of early writing, working with different schools, and that's always ongoing, and always talking about early years. I'm very passionate, always talking about early years education. I have written another proposal, which is all about using nature as the sort of stepping stones for learning within early years. So I'm hoping to put that out and looking to try and get that with a publisher, to sort of circulate that and see what may come of that. And also I'm doing lots of multi-generational artwork. I've linked again with some local artists and teachers and within the environment. And then we've been very fortunate to be working with some charities. So doing some multi-generational creative work under co-creation, looking at different art skills, and also doing lots of early years work as well in the community, working with families. So sort of sharing those things as well. So all those wonderful sort of elements, I've been fortunate to sort of marry my two great passions of early years and art together in what I'm currently doing, and within that sort of training and art sort of basis as well. And all the other things that I'd like to sort of try and share, just trying to share those things I've learned along the way, really, and actually say, yeah, you know, did you ever think of this? Because you might find that interesting. And always the only sort of adage to me is I've been in a privileged position as a sort of leader in education to actually go and into classrooms, into different schools, see practice. And the big thing I've always said is thank you for that today, because I've learned so much from you. I always see some elements of something else I've learned by just watching somebody else teach, somebody else's provision. And I just feel when I did my building project we've talked about today, I always open that up. We had lots of schools visit, which was lovely, because we just wanted to talk about our practice and what we could share across schools. Because every, as we said earlier, every setting's different, but we might be able to take ideas from, you know, share them with each other, because that's what it's about. We all came into teaching to make the difference. And I think I'll always have that in my heart, you know, that you can always make such a difference by making little inroads into education, reading about education and putting that into practice.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm sure people listening along today to the podcast will definitely have found all of the things that you've talked about in terms of the development of an outdoor space really interesting and useful, because it is a space, I think, outdoors is an area of practice that often people feel less confident about and a bit more self-conscious about, maybe. And so, you know, the things that you've talked about, those real life experiences, the things that you've done and the opportunities for your children, I think people will find that really useful. So thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's been brilliant to talk to you. Really, really interesting. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy.
So there you go. Thank you very much to Helen for joining us this week on the podcast. And of course, thank you as well to you people for listening along as well. I hope you enjoyed the episode. It is well worth knowing, actually, talking about designing outdoor spaces. That is something very much that we do at Early Excellence. So if you are in the process, or you're thinking about redeveloping your outdoor space, thinking about what goes where, thinking about actually really properly rethinking it, then do get in touch with us. We can definitely support you and advise you on the best way to go about doing it. Drop us an email. You can email me, andy@earlyexcellence.com, if you want to find out more about that, or just go on the Early Excellence website. There's lots of information on there. All right. Thanks again for listening. Take care, everybody, and we will see you next week.